Great, how are you?
I've got a chill running up my spine.
Oh?
Yeah, you know why?
Why?
Because Panning the Stream this month is panning the...
Ah!
That's right, it's Panning the Scream. If you have heard our last two episodes, you know the deal. And if you heard the spooky music at the beginning of this here episode, it might still be going on right now. We'll see in editing. Maybe by time Honda. It's October. It's the
it
spooky
is.
Month.
It's also, ooh, did you fart or was that?
That is definitely a dog fart.
Ooh, that's,
It has not hit me yet, thankfully, but we are in a tiny enclosed closet, just wrapped up with acoustic foam.
Yeah, that's a particularly human-like fart from one of these dogs.
I swear to God, I have
no, I believe you. I'm just trying to describe the smell to our listeners at home.
For the record, when it comes to dog farts masking human farts, in our almost 6 years together, me and Ubonk, there was one incident in which I tried to pass off, for humor's sake, a dog fart as my, my fart as a dog's fart.
That's right.
And it was, we were going to the liquor store on Taraval Street in San Francisco. Yeah. We had just started dating, and...
They had this little white dog there. It was such a cute little guy.
What was his name?
I forgot
his
name.
Was it Max? I don't know why I think it's Max, but that's another dog we know.
Yeah.
But yes, it smelled terrible, but it actually was me. While we were paying for liquor, I farted real bad, and we left, and you immediately were like, oh my God, did you smell that? And I was like, yeah. And you're like, I think you said, was that you? And I was like, no, I think it was the dog. And you're like, what? Like, that tiny dog had that big of a fart? And I let you believe that for maybe 10 or 15 seconds before crushing guilt for lying to you, even though I think we had just met. I was just like, I can't lie. I just can't do that. And I was like, it was me. I farted. And it's just been open farting since then.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, we're here in the Pizone, being suffocated by farts.
I don't smell it, to be honest.
I guess the Mason-Dixon line is your laptop and everything on my side is just engulfed in fart smoke.
I think I'm on the, yeah, I'm on the side that I cannot smell the fart. So, hey, thanks Razor for cordoning that off. I'm sorry you're dealing with that, Bonk.
That's right. It's kind of going away now.
It is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you've inhaled the entire fart and now there's no more floating around?
Yes, it's all inside of me now.
I wonder if that's how it works when you smell a fart. If it's like...
If you smell hard enough, it'll just go away.
Well, yeah, like let's say you have predator vision for farts, okay? And so a fart comes out and it's got like, oh, a million fart particles. Like you can see the cloud. And it's like, oh, well, here's all the particles. They are condensed. Obviously, mm-hmm. right when it comes out, it's the most condensed. Like here's right by the butthole is the most fart particles. But like, let's say we're in an enclosed place here and yeah. the fart kind of fills it up and you're breathing normally, and eventually all those particles are just inside you,
yeah.
or some went under the door or something, and it's like, well, there's no more fart to
yeah.
be had.
Yeah, and if you smell enough farts, you eventually become a fart.
Well, yes, that is there is a tipping point where there's a point of no return. Yeah.
I remember Adam Carolla, when I used to listen to his podcast way back in the day, people, I don't listen to it anymore. He would always tell the story about how he farted in like a coffee can, like you know they sell like coffee
Kimmel.
Grounds, yeah,
yes.
and like closed it and then like gave it to Jimmy Kimmel. He was like, "This coffee smells weird," and he opened it. And it was just condensed, concentrated fart,
and just to give a full inhale, like yeah, that's a good one.
I'd be curious how long a fart will linger in like a small sealed space like that.
I bet you'd be surprised.
I will say, just kind of related, I hate when I go into the elevator in our building and it's like whoever was just in there clearly farted up a storm. Because then my fear is like, if someone comes in between now and when I get to my floor, they're going to definitely think I farted. And then what's the protocol there? Do I like just, I mean, because I usually don't talk to people in the elevator. So if someone comes in the elevator, and normally I don't even say hi, but I suddenly am just like, hey, by the way, I know it smells bad in here and it wasn't me. Like, I feel like that's kind of almost
suspicious.
Like, you know, they say whoever smelt it dealt it,
it's
which
true.
I argue with that. I don't think that's true. I don't think that whenever someone smells it, they're also the one that dealt it.
Scientifically, it can't be true.
No, it can't be. It can't be. Because you could just exclaim that you smell something bad, and it's a shock, you know, when you're used to smelling nothing. And then all of a sudden, you're smacked in the face with poo.
That doesn't mean you're the farter.
No.
No, not at all.
It means you're a regular person responding to a slight change in the normal pattern of everyday life.
I had a very embarrassing thing that I did not know how to address or not address. This is when I worked at Giant Bomb, and I was in the CBS building, and I went in to go to the bathroom, and nobody was in the bathroom.
Okay.
And I walk in the stall, I shut the door, I lock the door.
Yeah.
And then I turn around, getting ready to take the old pants off and straddle the old bowl there.
No, you do that.
Okay. Yeah. And then I looked down, and it was the whole rim of the seat was completely covered in urine, and the inside was just absolute devastation poop everywhere. But here's where it gets bad. Okay, so of course, I'm not sitting down on that. I'm not cleaning that up. That was not my...
Of course.
I did not do that. Somebody before me was awful. And so I was like, whoop, okay. I turn around, I unlock the door, I walk out just as a janitor is walking in.
Oh, no. So what did you do?
I didn't address it. I just left.
You didn't just
I washed my hands.
You should have gone... Damn, that's pretty much... If you get out of the stall and then go to wash your hands, that's telling
Look,
the janitor that...
I panicked.
You should have gone into another stall. That would have expressed to the janitor...
Because, famously, there were only two shitters at CBS Interactive's men's bathroom. And so I'm pretty sure I would have gone into the other one if it was available to me.
By the way, what kind of madman goes into a stall and locks the door without first at least doing a cursory glance of the toilet to make sure they were in the clear?
You can do it in one motion.
But you didn't, obviously.
I guess not. No. That would have gotten me out of that. At least I wouldn't have been in there with the door shut, thus implicating me.
Yeah. So you went wrong here, which definitely amplified the awkwardness of your circumstance. Best case scenario, you would have left that stall. If there was another stall available, you would have gone in there, or you would have waited for it to become available. And if that was not an option, you would have just said to the janitor, excuse me, sir, I just want you to know it's a mess in there. I'm not responsible for it. I still need to go to the bathroom.
Yes.
You could even invite the janitor to follow you as you, you know, try to find a different bathroom so that he can put his ear to the door and listen to you then
you
evacuating
could
your
me
bowels.
Poop. Hear me poop.
Yeah. You should have told him, come with me and hear me poop.
Yes.
Yeah, it's life is hard sometimes. I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes I guess you pee with such force that you get it on the rim. How does that happen?
I think it's just pure. I think some people take joy in that. I remember in junior high, it was every single boys' bathroom you go into. There are dickheads everywhere.
That's insane, especially with like, and granted, I have different equipment, but from what I understand, most people hold their, am I allowed to say penis?
Yes, you can say penis, yes. Okay. We have an explicit rating on this podcast. You can say dick. Look
they
out.
Hold their throbbing, veiny cocks.
While
they pee. But wouldn't that give you some kind of control over the direction of the stream?
I don't think you get it. It's the capability for control is there. I think some people just want to watch the world burn, though, and they're just like, like that's what
that
I think the attitude
is. That is insane to me.
I think it has to infect a certain amount of the population because you see it everywhere in boys' bathrooms for sure.
Yeah, I mean, women's bathrooms, you know, that we are not without issues as far as that's concerned. Sometimes you get the pee drips on the rim, of course, and then I would just go to a different stall.
Mm-hmm.
That really boggles the mind. I think in the case of women, there's sometimes like backsplash because obviously, you know, that would be really hard to stand up and pee.
Yes.
That would be really hard.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
There's one time I was pooping and this is when I was in the San Francisco office of CBS. And that had three urinals on the outside of the stall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were all taken. So picture three CBS employees all peeing in urinals. I'm sitting in the stall. And I was probably texting you something. Mm-hmm. And you know how you like screenshot something on your phone. And you're like, oh, check out this tweet or this text or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And so I did that. And I did a screenshot. Camera noise. Loud as day. So either... To those three guys, I'm either taking a picture of my penis or I'm taking a picture of my poop. And so you bet your ass I sat in there until I saw no pairs of feet outside of there.
Oh, yeah. That was the wise way to navigate
that. You sit
that
one out.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. You've committed to being in there until those guys are finished at that point.
Yeah. And then you go throw your shoes in the garbage and buy some new ones and just make sure you cover up the trail.
I'm sure people do this, but the idea of, like, people taking a picture, you know, people send nude pictures all the time now I mean, I've never done that. From what I understand, you've never done that either.
There has never been a picture of my penis.
But having watched the show, the HBO show Euphoria, I understand that it's very common for Gen Z.
The kids today.
They commonly exchange nude photographs of themselves. So it's a very casual thing for them. It'd be like, hey, friend, this is what I look like naked. It's just like everyone knows what they look like naked now. But at any rate, I still can't imagine, even if it was such a casual, just everyday occurrence, that someone would take a picture of themselves in, like, going to the bathroom. Because that I could not imagine anything more unattractive than a man's, like, hairy thighs, flaccid penis.
Yeah.
While sitting on a toilet bowl, and you could probably see, like, the edge of a turd or something. The suggestion of a turd.
There's something for everyone.
No, I don't think that's for anyone.
Oh, there's always someone.
That's just gross.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. Anyway.
Painting the Scream. It's October.
Yeah, that was a ghoulish discussion we just had.
Yes, yes. Just as we planned.
Yes.
Yes. So, yes, with 10 minutes of poop talk out of the way, let's get to the scary stuff. We watched, so far, we got the, we did the
Hereditary
and Color Out of Space. Mm-hmm. And now, you know what? I don't think we expected to get this much mileage out of Shudder, but I'll be damned if we haven't, because we did.
Oh, well, certainly, yeah. I mean, it's perfect for our little event here, our little October event.
It's fitting.
Yeah. And it, like, we have, you know, I feel like we've been making a concerted effort to kind of tackle different types of horror movies, and Shudder has a huge variety. This is not an ad, by the way. We're just talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. No, honestly, it was perfect for these purposes. Yeah, so we did not stumble upon this one. This is one that came directly from old Bonk.
That's right.
One you saw back in the day. Is that correct?
You see, Daniel, when I was a young gal, maybe 12 years old, I would often go to West Coast Video with my father to rent movies for the weekend. And it got to a certain point where, you know, no new movies sounded appealing to me. So I then decided to just rent whatever cover looked cool. And that's when I saw the cover of Lady Vengeance. And then that started a whole, like, which continues to this day, a passion for foreign movies. Anyway, that led me to Audition, which is Japanese. Lady Vengeance is Korean. But yeah, I watched Audition at the suggestion of my brother Tommy. And yeah, it stuck with me. I'm not a huge fan of horror movies, as you know.
What did he tell you going in?
He told me about the guy in the sack.
Okay, so you knew there was weirdness afoot.
Yes.
Okay, well, I didn't mean to make a joke with a foot, but we'll get to that. Okay, so I would love to hear from anyone. If anyone listening to this had this experience, let us know on Twitter or email. If anybody went in totally blind and like didn't even know it was a horror movie, because here's the thing. If you have any interest in watching a movie that subverts expectations, and like obviously, look, we're covering this as part of a horror movie month, you know things get weird, but if you're kind of intrigued by that idea and you don't want to hear any more, go watch Audition on Shudder, or I'm sure there are other places you can find it with free trials and stuff, and then come back and listen to it. Because now that I've seen it, I'm almost kind of bummed that the art for it, or you know, like the images that pop up, the screens, when you hover over it, are so, I mean, I guess they're kind of spoilery. It's just like, you see the woman, her name is Asami. You see her with the syringe and the stuff on it. It's more obvious that where things are going.
Right.
I had an inkling that this turned into a thing where Asami was a nightmare.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think over 20 years since this movie has been released. I think at this point, if you were to pursue watching this movie, there's no way around, even if you make a concerted effort to go in blind, there's no way around the fact that this is a horror movie.
Unless someone that is a big fan of it, like just literally like gave you a disc and was like, don't look up anything, just watch this movie tonight. Like, I could see that maybe.
Yeah, happening. Or if anyone's listening, if their partner hasn't seen this movie, then just be like, hey, let's watch this movie, you know? And yeah, that'd be a good way to do it. But yeah, the first, like, hour of the movie is almost like a rom-com. It's got montages of this, like, hilarious audition. I mean, we'll obviously dig into it, but tonally, it's just, and that's what I love so much about this movie. It just shifts so quickly, and you kind of, even me as someone who's seen the movie before, it really eases you into it and you kind of get used to that before it kind of pulls the rug from under you.
Yeah, I kept waiting for like the first hint that something was awry because I knew that something goes real south with the story. Mm-hmm. And I think, so like you said, it starts out very kind of lighthearted, romantic comedy. So Shigeharu has lost his wife.
I think Oyama is where I see him more commonly.
Okay, we'll call him Oyama. Like I always say, it's lighthearted. And it's like, he lost his wife.
Well, yeah, that's the opening scene.
Right. So basically he's a widower and his son convinces him to like, hey, you seem pretty worn down lately. Why don't you find a new wife? And that kind of kicks off. It's like, okay, I'm going to get out there. I got my friend and we're going to put together this fake, you know, it's kind of a shady, weird, deceptive way to do it.
Yeah. He's like, it seems like he's vaguely affiliated with the film industry in some capacity and his friend is able to hold auditions for this real movie that may or may not exist. It might not come to fruition. The goal is to find a leading lady for this movie and also find a partner for Oyama.
Right. And it'll be two separate people because the friend says, like, you don't want to date the leading lady.
Right.
You want the one that, like, you know, didn't quite get the role, you know? And so that's the beginning here is him just like, oh, who am I going to date? I got to talk to all these girls and learn about them. And there's like kind of that quirky montage of all the girls, like, auditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And the first hint I got that something was weird was it was during one of these kind of more lighthearted things, cutting between scenes and stuff. And you see, like, a vision of the wife that passed away, like, sitting up in bed, just, like, staring forward with just kind of creepy lighting.
Right.
And they don't really linger on it. They don't talk about it. It's just, like, a quick shot in between things. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a hint. Something's going to get tonally weird here.
Yeah, that's what I really like about this movie is how it suggests that something's amiss. And, like, you know, anyone paying attention, I mean, like, you watch the audition sequence and Asami, like, there's something dark and mysterious about her. That much is obvious. But it still holds back so much and just, like, makes these suggestions throughout the movie until it's, like, very obvious towards the end what's going on. But the way it, like, doesn't hit you over the head with it, I really appreciate it. It's like, uses these visions of the wife to kind of, like, guide Oyama away. But, you know, obviously I think what the movie is really, like, a lot of the movie is about is how being in love and being infatuated is probably the better word, that can obscure your judgment and make you overlook things that might be obvious to people on the outside.
Yeah, it's like the part where, well, later on, she disappears, and Oyama is talking to his friend that helped him with the audition. And he's like, oh, my God, wait, am I the sad old guy who's, like, falling for was this obviously a bad, desperate ploy to the outside? And it's like, well, yeah, everyone else can see it. It's just he was so wrapped up in it. He was like, oh, this is the right thing, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of the movie, even though she is the main antagonist and the catalyst for all the horrible shit that happens, the movie is really about him.
Yeah. And even, like, the method in which he is going about finding this new wife, it's, you know, kind of implied that it's like, okay, well, he's being kind of shitty here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he's without any faults of his own. I mean, like, the way he's kind of, like, secretly auditioning these women to be his wife under the guise of a movie, it's kind of like, it's just a one-way street at that point because, you know, any woman then, if a producer is going to reach out to her and be like, hey, you want to grab a drink? Like, she would be ready and willing to do so if it is, you know, brings the possibility of an opportunity.
Right. It's very deceptive. It's very, you know, like, yeah, it's something you hear about all the time now in terms of, like, Hollywood and how auditions is very Weinstein stuff.
And he's literally looking at women on paper, their photographs, their, you know, brief essays, their characteristics, whatever. It's like shopping for something on Amazon.
Yeah, it's a casting call for a mate without the other side knowing what the deal is. It's not like they signed up to be part of a, like, you know, arranged marriage type thing. They thought they were advancing their careers. Little did they know.
Yeah. So I think we should talk a little bit about Asami herself. Like, I forgot the name of the actress. I didn't make a note of it. But she's so creepy, like, so effectively creepy.
Cold.
Like, very cold, but, like, just something, like, kind of doll-like about her.
I kept thinking of, like shark eyes, you know? Like, you know, just, like, dead,
black,
cold eyes.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, because in Jaws, Quint actually refers to them as, like, having, like, doll eyes. Mm. Yeah, so I guess one and the same.
Yeah. She's just, she plays that so well. She's, like, very, like, wraith-like, extremely thin. She always wears white, except for this really fluffy, like, almost one of those, like, boa type of feathery red jackets, which, you know, in retrospect, it's like, okay, it's white. She's this pure little girl. And then this burst of red, like blood. I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, I think to Oyama, she kind of symbolizes just like, you know, kind of the submissive partner that he wants, submissive, supportive, just doting on him. She's really good at that. And it boggles the mind, though, how he can fall in love with her, because she's a very poor conversationalist.
Oh, she's, yeah, there's not much going on there at all. And like, she's very, I mean, understandably, once we learn more, she's kind of cagey about her past and things like that. Mm-hmm. She does open up later on when they're in this hotel. But yeah, those early scenes when they're dating, like, she's not really given a lot to the conversation by any means.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too, when she's asked about, like, her references or, like, where she's working. She's quick to have a response because her responses do have a seed of truth to them. Like, she probably was a pupil of this, like, record producer. She did work at that bar. You know what I mean? So it's easy to conjure these things if they do have an iota of truth, but the reality is, like, far different than what she's presenting.
Yeah, which we start to see in kind of the middle section of the movie, where she has them listed as references, like this music producer and this bar owner, like, here's where I've worked in the last couple of years. And so Oyama starts, like, he's so infatuated with her, he's, like, kind of looking, he's going back through this. I can't remember if she disappeared at this point.
Yeah, she disappeared, and that's what made him kind of try to reach out to the references and investigate the ballet school to just try to find her, I guess.
Right, okay. So he breaks into the ballet school, and we see this guy with, like, this, it's unclear, something terrible has happened to his feet. They're, like, attached to boards, and
it's
he's
gross.
A big creep.
He's sitting in a wheelchair just, like, playing piano in the corner of this dilapidated ballet school.
Yeah, things aren't going well if that's what's going on with your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Typically not.
And he knows Asami, like, when Oyama asks him about her, like, he immediately knows and makes it obvious that they have some kind of weird connection, which we find out more about later.
Yeah, yeah. And then there is a part before she disappears where Oyama's friend is like, hey, don't call her back immediately, you know, wait a few days or whatever before you call back. And we see what she's doing when he eventually does call back. And she's literally, like, sitting in this, like, empty apartment on the floor, unmoving.
Just a phone and a mysterious sack.
Yeah. And I think you see it move at some point during this, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, no, there's just no warmth to the apartment. It's just this empty place with, like, a burlap sack. And she goes from, like, curled up, unmoving, to, like, the second the phone rings, she's, like, smiling, like, picks it up. She's like, oh, yeah, I'm very excited to meet up with you again. I thought you wouldn't call. And so at this point, it's pretty clear things are going bad surrounding her and her past, basically.
Yeah.
And her whole being. There's something very wrong.
Something's here. Wrong. Yeah.
Yes. Which is compounded when she disappears and Oyama goes to the bar that she used to work at. And there's a dude that lives above the bar who's like, oh, that's been closed for a year after they, like, found the body of the owner hacked up. And there was also an extra three fingers, an ear, and a tongue. You're big on true crime and, like, murder stuff and everything. Has that ever been a thing where it's like, oh, we thought we found one murder scene, but there's all this shit here?
I can't remember specifically if that has ever happened where there's, like, a mix of different limbs,
like,
where both parties are unknown.
It's like a Mortal Kombat 3 fatality where there's, like, 8 rib cages. It's like, well, that's not how that works.
How many rib cages are there?
Well, I think it's one rib cage, but I think there's like two sections of it, but you get one rib cage, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There is one rib cage.
Yeah, there's one right in there, but you get uppercutted by Johnny Cage and all of a sudden you got 20 flying out of there. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But we reference her disappearing. That comes after the Seaside Motel right. scene. Where, so, yeah, he says he plans on proposing. And she starts saying, like, I need you to love me and no one else.
Yeah, it's like the least seductive seduction I've ever seen. Where she's just, like, not talking, very quietly and slowly takes off her clothes and just lays on the bed and, like, lifts up the blanket so he can see these, like, burns on her thighs. But being really creepy.
Yeah, like, he's sitting there talking about, like, what they're going to do on vacation. Like, oh, then we can go to this place, then we'll go get food here, we'll do this. And she is just, like, blankly, like, staring ahead and then does the, like, disrobing and medically, like, sits in the... she's, like, in a coma, just staring at him and is like, love me and no one else.
Yeah, I mean, like... aren't you supposed to kind of enjoy sex?
I think,
like,
that's the intended purpose, yeah.
She seems to just be, like, taking this completely serious. Like, imagine having sex with someone that's just, like, staring blankly at the ceiling.
I don't think I... No. That sounds no good at all.
That would be bad.
That would be awkward. Awkward isn't even a strong enough term. I don't even know if there's a term for that.
I'm just saying, they didn't show the sex scene, but I can't imagine her really being enthusiastic.
She's just on top, just woohoo, like spinning a hat around.
Reverse,
like,
cowgirl.
Yeah, exactly. All sorts of positions, fucking pile driver, and just, yeah. She's just into it. She's just making jokes the whole time, you know. It's like, yeah. That's the director's cut. That's
yeah.
She likes the director's cut. So yeah, she disappears after that. And then he goes around looking for her and everything. And then he comes home one night. And this is where things take a severe turn.
Yes.
So it's implied, we kind of see from her perspective.
Yeah, she, like, sneaks in when no one's home and sees a picture of his wife, which spurs, I guess, feelings of rage inside of her. So she drugs his...
Whiskey or scotch or whatever
it is. Yeah. He has, like, a decanter of some kind of liquor and she drugs it.
Yeah.
Because she knows that he will be indulging in his nightly... snifter? Is that what it is?
I've never really known snifter, decanter. I just
well, decanter is the, like, big thing that holds the liquor.
I like the look of that.
I think snifter is, like, the little
Is that a wine
cup.
Thing?
I think it's meant more for, like, liqueurs and, like,
oh, okay.
that kind of thing.
Boy, I've drank a lot of booze in my life, but I am not a fancy container guy. I got an ice bucket now. That's about as fancy as I get.
You have a liquor globe. That's the ultimate fancy container.
Well, yes. I go hard with fanciness with the liquor globe, but then I just drink out of my, like, Madison Square Garden souvenir cup or whatever.
Your Red Solo goblet.
Yeah, that I got from B.B. King's in Nashville. Yes. Yeah, so, okay. When he drinks the stuff and passes out, there's a lot of gross stuff that happens between this point and the end of the movie, but I think one of these first ones is the thing that just grossed me out the most, which is he is kind of seeing flashbacks. Mm-hmm. Oyama is kind of seeing her. It's not really explained why he is able to see her past because he gets poisoned, but whatever. It's just narratively, that's how they showcase mm-hmm. this. And so we see her apartment. And the dude who had the missing ear and the tongue and the fingers...
The music producer.
Yes, he's... Wait, he was the producer? I thought the guy on the piano was the music producer.
No, that's her ballet instructor that sexually abused
her. Oh, it's two different people. Okay, so the music producer was the guy in the sack.
Yeah,
he's
that's one that's
dude.
Missing.
Got it. Okay. So he's the one, yeah, he's missing a tongue and everything, just making horrible noises and, like, crawling and everything. Mm-hmm. And...
he has no feet, no tongue. He's missing a bunch of fingers.
Yeah, he's in a bad, bad way.
And he's kept in a sack.
Yes, in her apartment. And he eats, she takes a dog bowl and pukes in it
mm-hmm.
and then puts it down in front of him, which he, like, hungrily laps up.
Mm-hmm.
This was the scene out of all the horrific stuff that happens. And granted, it was very, very unsettling mm-hmm. from this point on. But him just, like the noises and just, like, this, like, brown liquid. Mm-hmm. I just, like, oh, man, I don't want to see any of this. This is that was the part that got me the most, I think.
Yeah, that was unpleasant. But I really love that scene.
It's fucked up.
Yeah.
this is a fucked up movie.
I think they could have made the vomit look grosser, though. It was just kind of like a milky... I feel like if they did more of a, like, a chunky dog food kind of look to it.
But here's the thing is, like, I feel like that's maybe why it worked for me so much, is I'm so used to seeing vomit in, like, whether it's, like, a Team America or an SNL sketch where there's the clear hose and, mm-hmm. and there's comic amounts of mm-hmm. vomit coming up. It is always kind of that slushy, oatmeal-looking, sloppy stuff. Like, that's what I'm used to. Mm-hmm. And so I associate that with fake vomit. And so to see, like, just kind of this, like... murky brown with, like, occasional little, like, bits of, like, carrot or whatever was in it.
Mm.
That read to me as more realistic.
Sure.
And it really grossed me out.
Yeah, it was nasty.
Yeah. He was into it, though. I guess that's all he's had to
eat. I mean, he doesn't have a tongue, so.
Yeah, he's just like dipping his face in there.
Yeah, it's not like he really has a preference. He just needs sustenance to continue his horrible existence in a sack.
Oh my God. Yeah. And it gets violent gross after that.
Right.
So why don't you talk about what happens there?
So he kind of, Oyama kind of wakes up from the initial like drug induced vision and being like passed out to see her like he's splayed out in the living room. She like puts this mat down like Dexter style and rolls him out onto it. And then she injects him with this like paralytic agent that makes it so he can't move. But his nerves are still intact. His nerves can still feel things.
Which it sounds to me like when people describe like those, what do you call them when you wake up and you're kind of like sleep paralysis? Mm. And like, but there's still elements of like dream stuff where people talk about saying like, oh, a shadowy figure walked in the room and sat on my chest and I couldn't move, mm-hmm. but I was kind of awake, but not like, which is such a terrifying concept.
Right.
This felt like that to me.
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine that would be so, like to just be like, I'm not restrained. Why can't I just move? Like,
yeah.
And then she, she has this like leather apron kind of thing, like a, I don't know how you would describe it, like a
smock.
Yeah, smock.
Like a heavy, it's almost like one of those x-ray things they put over you.
Yeah, and like an eye, like these gloves and everything. She takes out, she has like a whole kit of like torture devices. She takes out a bunch of these long needles.
But this is after she says that the thing that she's injected him with will actually, not only has it paralyzed him, but it makes his nerves like super duper sensitive.
Right. And she starts putting these needles into, like, his stomach and his chest, and, like, she drills him in super deep, and she, like, very creepily says, like, deeper, deeper, deeper.
It's like, Kiri, 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 yeah.
Yeah, and apparently that line was improvised, which is, like, one of the things that I remembered most clearly from when I had seen it, like, many, many, many years ago.
Yeah, it was, like, it was script direction, where it's like, oh, she puts it in deeper, mm-hmm. deeper, deeper, but they liked her saying it, mm-hmm. which it's very effective.
Yeah. And then she sits on all those needles. And then she puts them in his, in and around his eyes, which, I mean, come on, people. Needles in your eyes? No, thank you.
It's like to anyone who's played
Dead Space 2. We can all agree. Needles in your eyes? No good.
It's a big old thumbs down. You know that one scene from Dead Space 2 that everyone talks about, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years later or whatever? It's just that, but extended and a bunch of times. And it's just awful. They show it a bunch. There are these tiny, thin little needles sticking out, like, under and in. And it's just like, ugh. I remember when we first see her doing it, it's kind of like in first person. I remember thinking, like, she's probably doing that in his eyes, isn't she? Are we going to see that? Are we going to have to see this? And then it, like, cuts to his face. And it's like, oh, man, that sucks.
I think it's important to mention, before we completely move past it, like, during the sequence of visions in which we see the guy in the sack eat the vomit, we also see her as a child, like a young ballet student.
Yes.
And her instructor, the guy with the weird feet playing the piano, would, like, brand her in her inner thigh.
Yeah.
And, like, jerk off while, like, watching her ballet. So it's, like, heavily implied that she was sexually abused by this guy.
Oh, it seemed like she had a lifetime of horrible abuse. And,
yeah.
And we see quick flashes of all that.
Yeah, yeah. And that, in a way, kind of informs what she's doing now.
It adds some important context to, like, how she became this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So she takes this, like, wire saw and loops it around his ankle a bunch of times and then just saws his foot off.
Yeah. And, like, tightens it. And it's not, like, a quick thing. It's not, like, a typical horror movie thing, like, oh, slice, your foot's off. It's really, like, she's talking about it. And she's like, oh, wow, this really gets tight here. And it'll just saw right through the bone.
And she's, like, having fun while she's doing it.
Just... Yeah, like, smiling and really taking her time.
It's the only time you really see her, like, enjoy herself.
Emote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. She starts on the other foot, and then Oyama's son comes home.
Yeah, and during this time, they do a lot of, like, oh, it was all a dream type flashes. There's a lot of, like, bending of reality here, because at one point, Oyama thinks that he's back at the hotel, you know, with her, and that things are great and everything. And I remember thinking, like, that seems like kind of a cop-out ending if it's just like, ooh, I got this crazy flash of she might be crazy.
Well, I mean, he was laying in the bed with her, but, like, you could tell, like, he is still of, like, the perspective of having just seen her saw his foot off, so he's very creeped out by her still.
Right, I was thinking it was like, oh, he just woke up.
No,
from
I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
but his expressions and stuff suggest that what happened was still real. But yeah, oh yeah, the dog. She killed the dog. Which
oh
is
yeah,
fun,
that's, yeah.
So the son comes home and she's thrown off guard. I don't think she knew he had a son, and she takes this spray. It's not clear what it is, but she's chasing after him. They go up the stairs. And he kicks her down the stairs, and her being this tiny little nymph of a woman just goes fucking flying.
Yeah, yeah.
And it looks like she breaks her neck or something.
She's got a nice flat back bump there at the bottom. But yeah, I think her neck got messed up, and she's basically just like you know, in the middle of dying. And there, she does kind of repeat some words she said earlier in the movie while looking at him. But yeah, like Oyama tells his son to call the police and everything. And that's it. That's the end. It's normally like, you know, I've read about how this movie influenced like Eli Roth and like, you know, the torture porn genre and stuff like that, which I've always hated that genre. Mm-hmm. I saw Saw. I saw Hostel. It just they read to me as cheap.
Right.
Where it's
I
just
agree.
Like, look, it's so easy to like just get some really good practical effects people or just some really good effects people in general and think of just the most horrifying things that somebody could ever go through. Oh, mm-hmm. you're strapped to a chair and they're cutting your Achilles. And, you know, like Hostel does a lot of this. I don't know if you saw that. Did you see Hostel?
No, I saw Saw.
Yeah, and it's like, I never found him particularly effective or good, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And that's, you know, again, like, when I talk about not being super into the horror genre, it's because a lot of, like, a lot of contemporary horror movies, I feel like, rely on that stuff too much. Like, between that and jump scares, it just feels like the cheapest way to scare someone or get a reaction out of someone.
Yeah, and this one is definitely a horror movie, but it doesn't rely on either one of those things. It is definitely not a jump scare movie. I don't think there's anything that would qualify as a jump scare in this movie. And the torture part of it, while horrifying and gratuitous, it is done in a really subtle manner that is just kind of built to. It's not a movie filled with these scenes like, oh, she's kidnapping and torturing these people and there's, you know, six big torture scenes here. No, it is one incredibly impactful torture scene at the very end that they're not getting real gross with like, oh, let's zoom in on this and let's linger on the shot of the tendons ripping or let's play this ominous music or anything. It is cold and clinical in a way that makes it so much creepier, I think.
Yeah, and I think the coolest part about that, too, is that, you know, it's not about necessarily him being physically tortured. It's really about how she's reacting to all of this. Because it's like we said, it's the first time we see her kind of emote.
Yeah.
And this is how, you know, she says, like, pain brings out who you really are. Like, this is obviously something that's been instilled in her. And then she wants to then share with the person that I still think that she, like, it wasn't a long con to then get him in a position where she could torture him. I think she really did like him.
Yeah.
But this is how she expresses that.
Yeah. I don't think she knew anything about him, like, you know, having a family or the wife or anything, even an ex-wife, you know, because I don't think they talked about that. And for her to react so strongly to the photo says she doesn't. And also it's her joy at everything and also Oyama's like complete lack of control of like this thing. He's been injected with this thing. Mm-hmm. He is clearly struggling and trying to move and get out of this horrible situation and he can't do shit.
Yeah. It's as a viewer, you really feel that too, because the whole movie is like from his perspective. So
yeah,
that scene is very much like, it's obviously hard to watch because of the physical stuff. But, like, psychologically, it's difficult to watch because you kind of feel that, like, complete loss of control as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredibly effective.
Yeah.
It is hard to watch. And, like, it's rare that a movie builds to one scene that is just so condensed effective. I feel like everything built to that, and it made that last, like, 15, 20 minutes so much more effective.
Yeah. The whole movie, you're wondering what is up with this lady, and it pays off in a big way.
Yeah, it's unsettling. It is unnerving. It is violent and fucked up. It is unlike anything I've ever seen, I would say.
Yeah.
So
and that's just to remind people who are listening, the first hour is like a rom-com.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it goes from like, oh, I want to meet some girls and stuff, and then it ends with this.
Yeah.
Yeah, fucked. Just totally fucked. Thank you for introducing me to this.
Of course. It is
horrific.
I'm glad we got to cover it.
Yes. This is the right month to do it in during panning the scream here. So with that done, I want to thank the patrons of panning the stream. It's also panning the scream. We didn't set up a separate Patreon for the Halloween gimmick. So thank you to all of you. And if you don't know, we'll tell you. If you go to patreon.com/panningthestream, you will get for $5, one easy tier, you will get ad-free episodes each and every week.
Wow.
You will get early access to the episodes. You'll get them on Saturday instead of Sunday.
Wow.
You will get access to our very active Discord shared with the Twitch community that has, we got over 300 active people in that Discord. It's a blast in there.
It's the best.
It's really, really great. They've been awesome for a million different reasons. And also, most importantly, you get, for you, a Bonku written for you by Bonk.
That's correct, Daniel.
Do we have someone this week, Bonk?
That's right. This week, we're honoring our friend Alex. Alex is a formidable opponent. He's well-versed in the art of persuasion. And a lot of people agree that he's the best hopscotch person that they've ever seen.
Ever?
Ever. He's better at hopscotch than any of the kids at the schoolyard.
My goodness. What a cool dude.
So, Alex, I wrote this banku for you, and I hope you enjoy it. Actually, this happens to be one of the rare occasions in which the theme of the banku kind of aligns with the season at the right now. I mean, I remember we had a previous banku that kind of was very appropriate for, I think it was Ip Man. It worked well together. It's unintentional, but it's nice when it happens.
Nice.
Anyway, Alex, this is for you. I was so impressed with Alex's pumpkin pie that I married it.
You married a pie?
That's right, Dan.
Is that legal?
It is now.
All right. I'm going to have to talk to some courts here. I don't know how Connecticut works, and I'm
jealous. Sure you can marry a pie if you really wanted to, right?
Well, I was under the impression that we were married, consider me shocked and disappointed.
There's another pie.
Another pie? Or is this the first pie? Because I'm not a pie. A man.
But it's not another man. It's another pie.
Okay, well, I might have to knock on someone's door, some pie's door, and have some words tonight. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you.
Hey, the banku, it isn't, you know, it's not canon. I didn't actually marry a pie. This is just, I'm just trying to illustrate.
Okay, well, you should have led with that.
Well, I thought you knew at this point.
Okay, well, that makes me feel better if you're not actually married to a pie. So thank you. And thank you to our new patron.
Alex.
And before we go, we got the Hugh game here. We got a card.
There's
the theme song going on right now. The question this week is, have you ever fallen asleep during something important?
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure like classes and stuff like that. The one thing that immediately comes to mind is when I was playing Destiny 2 all night. And then the very next morning, like I had to take a bus to New Jersey to go to my... my sister-in-law's bridal shower.
No, you were coming back from Jersey.
Well, yeah, I know. I'm just telling the story.
Right, you had been up all night. Yeah,
I've been up all night. And so I had to, like, I was up all night playing this game. I went there. I had to, you know, do the bridal shower stuff, which requires mingling. You know, it's not a zero-energy endeavor. And then the bus ride back, I fell asleep. And the bus driver, like, we got to Port Authority, and the bus driver had to wake me up.
I remember I was texting you asking if you had gotten on the bus, and you said you were so out of it due to lack of sleep that you couldn't even look at your phone straight to answer the text.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you just zonked right out.
Yeah. What's better than playing video games all night, though? I mean, like...
It's a fun thing to do, and I'm glad we still get to do it very
frequently. Yeah, we get to do it, all the time.
We do it a lot. It's great. Mine, I would say, the first one that comes to mind is when I went to go see Conan. It was his third episode of The Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I deal with anxiety stuff and everything, especially anytime I feel like I can't easily leave a situation, middle seat of a theater, airplanes, things like that. And so, and also I pee a lot too, you know, so, it plays in. And so we're sitting in the crowd. And if anyone's ever been to like a late night or a TV taping or something, you know, they have very strict schedules. They usually have someone come in and be like, hey, once we hit this point, you know, once you hear like the band start or something, no one gets up from their seats, you know, hey, we'll give you this window right now. If you want to go to the bathroom, go now, but that's your last chance until the show's over. And of course I went and I peed and I was like, I'm going to need to go again if I don't. And I got back and the band started. And I realized, like, oh, shit, I'm completely locked in. Like, I cannot stand up and leave without, like, disrupting Conan's third Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was also, like, a lot of excitement built up because it's my first time seeing Conan, I think. And I remember by the time the music was over for the opening.
Were you with anyone?
I was with Trevin, yes. And I remember I pulled out on my keychain. I had that little, like, you know, in case I have a panic attack, I've got Xanax. And I rarely turn to it. But here it was like... I can't leave here. I need to take this so I can get through this hour. And I took it out, and it was all so chalky and everything since I so rarely open that thing. And I put it in my mouth, and I didn't have any drink or anything. Like, there's no water or anything, so it's just like chalky, disgusting tasting Xanax. I'm just like trying so hard. It's just like my throat's all dry, and I'm trying to swallow it. It was terrible. And it helped, you know, it's effective. But then, like, I remember by the time I think Julia Louis-Dreyfus and like Bradley Cooper were the guests, and I vaguely remember them. And then I remember after the show, feeling like I had like fallen asleep or something.
Yeah.
And this is just like half a small dose of Xanax. Yeah. I was so not used to it. I was like, I knew Sheryl Crow was supposed to be on there. And I was like, I know I was sitting in that seat with, you know, Sheryl Crow performing. And I do not remember that at all.
Wow.
And I asked Trevin, my old roommate, and he was like, oh, yeah, you just completely fell asleep in your seat during Conan. Like, I think it was while Bradley Cooper was out there, I just fell asleep. I blame Bradley Cooper.
It's his fault.
Yes. So that's my answer. That is going to be it for this week on Painting the Scream. Indeed. I think we've got, I think we got one more left. Let's see. This is going up the weekend of the 17th and 18th. Yep, we got the 24th and 25th. So we will have one more movie coming your way next week. We'll keep doing the podcast afterwards. It just won't always be spooky movies. No. We got other plans coming up. Maybe some fun ones that people have been looking forward to. But for now, one more Panning the Scream coming next week. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Pan the Stream. If you can give us the 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, always appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you to Tom Manda for the spooky theme song that you're hearing right now.
Thank you, Scientist. Live show streaming on October 27th. You don't have plans that night, so you should buy a ticket and support them virtually. They put on an amazing live show, and their Halloween shows are legendary.
Yes, it will fit with the season, so check them out. And Bonk, thanks so much to you for joining me each and every week.
Thank you, my love.
I got a pie to go talk to. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.